Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension. My name is Almeen, and we are very happy that you have joined us today, and we have with us Paul St. John. Paul, welcome, and as usual, I'm sure you have great questions prepared for us, and what would you like to talk about?
Well, Almeen, I'd like to start today with a question about the subpersonalities. You speak at length of the subpersonalities in your book, Journey to the Heart of God. And I'm curious why you've mentioned that it is the destiny of man to solve the mystery of the subpersonalities. Could you talk about that?
Yes, I can. Linear time recently collapsed in that the space collapsed. And time actually is awareness's movement through space. Well, awareness stopped moving in 2006, as we describe in our book, The Ring of Truth, when a major event happened in the cosmos. But light still did. And the pathways of light, because there was linear movement, still created time. However, there was a loop that was created in time to try and figure out a way in which the various races in the cosmos could coexist with equanimity. Man participated in this loop of time, and in that loop, things did not go very well. And I started some years ago to train masters, and when we were looking for the destiny at that time that they had undertaken with the infinite as to what portion of existence they would solve with their lives, we always found that their past, actually, when we peeled it back and peeled it back over weeks of working together, that it lay in their future. So this is how I started to uncover that there was this loop of time. And in the loop of time, the Earth was part of a massive dynasty that would have taken place in our future. But it also is our past, because it was a loop. Well, there was such a destruction that happened, in addition to which planets were blown up. The Earth was shot out of the area where she was located in space. And part of the trauma of huge numbers of souls finding that they no longer have a planet to incarnate on, because they were all just killed, but no planet to go back to and incarnate on, was a fracturing that happened of the personality. So there, you know, like when you have people with multiple personalities, it's the result of tremendous trauma that happened as a child, where they couldn't deal with it, and so they fractured, and they have these walled-off portions within themselves. Very similar to that, man fractured of being at the absolute hub of the trauma and seeing planets blown out of the sky, spirits with no, completely displaced. Mother then, as the mother creator of all existence, and father was her first creation, went back in time, millions and millions of years, called in all the major star races that were involved in this experiment of how races could get along in a benign dynasty that benefits all with trade and that sort of thing, which failed. So she went back and she contacted these races and she said, look, if you come upon this planet right here and help us to produce a being that has bits and pieces of all of you in. For example, the Andromedan galaxy, there were two star systems in there that contributed, and one of them gave the mental body to humans. Beings from Orion came in. They gave the pineal gland, the reptilian brain, to this being who became the first man. Now, this is not the man you see currently on the surface of the planet, but it is the man that you still find in some numbers within the inner Earth. And within the inner Earth, the hollow Earth, where millions and millions of beings are living, there still are the tall people that came from the ancient motherland of Lemuria, where millions of years before this experiment took place. But they laid the human grid in around the planet. And in this human grid, you know, they had the fractured personalities that fractured the personality into the inner nurturer, the inner child, the inner sage, and the inner warrior. So man now had become the total archetype of the races that were represented in this time loop experiment to produce interdependency versus complete independency or codependency or dependency, which were more primitive stages of development. And they themselves were representative of billions of other beings as their archetypes. So man became the archetype of archetypes, having within their makeup everything that was unique and praiseworthy about other beings, and having the self-personalities fractured in a way that represented the child races of the cosmos, the warrior races, the nurturer races, the sage races, etc. Therefore, how does one now get these races that couldn't work together before to work together so that this future didn't have to happen? Well, man has to learn how to work with their sub-personalities within. The child does not do the sage's job. This is part of what went wrong before, that they were trying to do each other's work. It was more glamorous to be the rulers and than it was to be the child race. So the child ran the roost. When people's sub-personalities are not properly balanced, their inner child, unparented and needy, will determine their relationships. Well, you know, meantime it chose somebody else that was needy and therefore was willing to parent your inner child to the extent that it needed it, instead of you parenting your own inner child. So it was solved within man. And one day in 2005, that loop, like a loop in a belt that you then just pull tight and the loop is gone, disappeared. We had learned the lessons that the loop was designed to learn. And it had been learned by the archetype within. It's vitally, vitally important that we learn to work together as sub-personalities, because in any group you will find the dynamic of the sub-personalities. And that's why we spent a lot of time researching it and putting it into the books, and specifically Journey to the Heart of God, as you point out.
Thank you, Almin. That was a very enlightening answer. Another thing that I'd like some information on is a phrase that you've used on one of your older CD sets. It's called The Fire Within. I was wondering if you could tell us what you mean by the term fire within.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I need to know how it was used. Do you remember how I used it? Because the fire within can mean several things.
Well, how about you? I'm not entirely sure how you use it, actually, so it's probably better.
So let's tackle them all, right? Okay, well, the fire within could refer to the desire to be in expansive mode. There are 96 pure emotions. There are some of them fall in the category of states of being, etc., and we have referred to them on previous programs together with Paul. But the point is, they are in pairs. They pulse one another. For example, if we are in joy too long, we don't accomplish. We overstagnate into beingness, and we don't do too much doingness. We want to stay home. We want to watch TV all the time. We don't want to go to work, so we'll just draw unemployment or, you know, live with a relative or whomever. But we don't want to go into the doingness because we're overpolarized into what is called contraction. Because the negative receptive emotions, of which there is one in each pair, pulls us into contraction, into the inner world. The outer world has the desire to expand without into doingness. And so the desire to expand into doingness, for instance, the opposite of joy, which pulls within and wants to sit in bliss all day long, is passion, the desire to know. Passion wants to drive us across the next horizon. It wants to take us into places where we can build empires. It wants to know what has never been known before. It's that outward desire of to expand. Overpolarization into either expansiveness or contraction creates lack of growth and eventually atrophy and death. Death as in bringing about such a loss of soul force that there's no point for the body to continue. But that desire to go from beingness into doingness can be termed the fire within. So that's one way in which that can be used, that which drives us forward. So the next way in which I could have used the term the fire within has to do with the instinctual nature. And the instinctual nature is the wild woman archetype or the green man archetype that you find in folklore, and you find examples of this in various fairy tales and so on. The instinctual nature makes us go the extra mile. It gives us the bit of steel in our spine that we need when the going gets tough. It drives us out of the corner into a last-ditch attack when we are so cornered that there's nothing left. It is that desperation in a man's eye when everything he has been taken away, that last ounce that thrusts forward. It is also that which inspires us to explore potential that has never been lived before, which is now not the unknown that we spoke of before, but the unknowable. And it is that which makes us dance in the moonlight and create spontaneity and vitality and instinctual knowledge that is born of ancient wisdom. That fire in our soul is the direction of below. And when we have been over-pruned, over-nice, over-stifled, over-concerned with what others think, over-concerned with what we think of ourselves, all of those things encumbered by the weight of reflection of value based on what we do, those things stifle this fire within that enlivens our life and puts a glow in our cheeks. So that is a second way in which I could have used the fire within.
Wow. Well, going back to the first way, it sounded to me like it related somewhat to the Kundalini or even to sexual energy. Is that possible? Could you talk about that a little bit?
That is separate, and that's absolutely a third way. Yes.
Okay.
So the fire within could refer, technically, I don't believe it's the way I meant it, but it could technically refer to what we call the cold fire, the blue fire. which is the Kundalini energy. The Kundalini energy, it can be said, determines the power of any being. How much Kundalini you can produce, how much energy comes up the spine. The dynamic of how it works is fascinating. Kundalini doesn't rise when the left and the right brain have not been properly synchronized. When the flow of information between the unknown, which is accessed through feeling or non-cognitive knowing by the right brain, flows from the right brain properly through the colostrum, which connects the left and right brain, to the left brain as in, and is interpreted logically and put into information that can be used in experiential knowing so that it can be turned into wisdom. This is the pathway of information coming in from the unknown. The actual fact is everything that we think is known, so much of it is not. For example, the unknown is my words. I can use the word fire. It stands for something completely different for me than it would for you, for sure. For me, I often, you know, when I've done, I used to do a lot of healing work. I don't do that anymore because of the calling that I've received from the mother. But the point of the matter is that I used to work on people. They would bring in their relatives and they'd bring in their relatives because, you know, of the work that was happening, they wanted them all to benefit from it. And so my hands would, I could feel the density build up around my hands. I would wash my hands in the fire. If there's a candle handy or a fire in the fireplace, I'd go and wash my hands in the fire as much as I would the water, because for me, I see it as something fourth dimensional. It's for me light. It's not hot. So the point is that it could mean something entirely different to me than it does to you. The only way you can know what I'm saying is to feel it, to sound out my words, to feel if they have the ring of truth. Okay, that's the title of the book, because I asked Mother, how will people know that these words are true, because the whole nature of reality has changed. And she said, because your words will have the ring of truth. So we entitled the book The Ring of Truth. So when that flow from the unknown to the known happens properly, and there is this balanced interaction between left and right brain cognition, that's when the Kundalini rises. That's when empowerment comes. In A Life of Miracles, we show the God archetypes of the left brain and the goddess archetypes of the right brain, and how in their interaction, Arachne opens that inner portal. That inner portal is the fire within rising up the spine. It's the Kundalini. That's when transfiguration happens. That's when you reach new levels of power. To how much can rise up the spine. And the bodies of white magic that Mother has been reestablishing amongst man, that is totally incorruptible in that it cannot be used in any way selfishly. There's the rose, the Order of the White Rose in Ireland. There is the Order of the White Dove in America. And there is the Order of the Kundalini magic that we call the serpent magic, that has been opened up by Mother in Canada with a group of Eastern Europeans and Canadians jointly reestablishing this ancient, ancient order. But the first the one, then the other, now this, because that's literally how it works within man.
Could you speak a little bit about how this energy can be used for ascension?
Yes, I will. But you know what? I notice on the clock here that it's time for our commercial break, so we'll be right back and we'll answer that.
this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspana, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almaine at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back to Windows into Eternity. And Paul, you were asking about how the raising of the Kundalini, or the fire within, can in fact affect the ascension process. And let's take a little look at that. We have seen in the New Testament the flames that happened on the heads of the people that were gathered at the Pentecostal meeting, the meeting at Pentecost. Violet flames appeared on the heads of those that were gathered. It was called the Holy Spirit settled in them. Well, what happens is that for the average person in the street, their chakras are like cones, with the point towards the center facing forwards and backwards. A cone forward, point to the middle, a cone backwards, point to the middle. That's what, if you see them from the side, their seven chakras look like. Why there is that narrow portion in the middle, which happens to be in the pranic channel, and if you take your thumb and your middle finger and you put them together, that is for you the size of your pranic tube. Straight from the top of your head, straight through to the perineum at the base of the spine. That's the pranic tube. Now, it's in the pranic tube where these narrow portions of your chakras are, because there are blockages, there are plugs. Let's say somebody has had their heart broken multiple times and they did not get the insights from those experiences. They were fruitless experiences. But the unresolved insights in the form of debris will be in the middle of the heart chakra in that pranic tube. For ascension to take place, those pranic tubes have to open all the way. Then, in other words, the blockages of the chakras themselves have to be gone. And so when they're gone, the chakras become spherical. So you have a sphere where the heart chakra is, a sphere where the midriff is for the third chakra, etc., for these energy centers. No longer the cones with the seals. The opening of the seven seals described in Revelations, that has long since taken place, incidentally, and that's a whole other issue, but it's nothing to be concerned about for the future, is in fact the Earth's preparation for her ascension. Her ascension started in February of 2005. The opening of the seven seals are areas on the surface of her that had to release things in the form of floods, earthquakes, etc. and mental chakras will release in the form of big cyclones and hurricanes and so on. So the opening of the seven seals is exactly part of what the ascension process is. When it opens, the Kundalini shoots up and ignites on top of the head in the form of a violet flame. Maybe you can see it, maybe you can't. Maybe it could happen when you're asleep. But for me, it was very visible when that first happened. And I believe it happened in 2003. Very, very visible. And when that happens, then the eighth and the ninth chakra comes online. The eighth chakra is on the left side where a woman's ovaries would roughly be. The ninth is on the right side in a similar way. Then, as the energy now increases and flows up the pranic tube, it ignites the tenth chakra, which you can see as a big ball of light in Sumerian and Egyptian, and some of the, I don't know if other arts in ancient times utilized it, but you see many, many beings depicting this disc of light above the head. That is the tenth chakra that has been opened. It shows a man or woman of enlightenment. If it's big enough, it will cleave the flame on top of the head, and it grows bigger the more enlightened you become. So it will cleave the flame. Hence, it will look like the disc of Isis with these two horns on either side. That's the cleaving of the flame of ignited fire on top of the head. When the 10th chakra has opened, called the Lahun chakra, L-A-H-U-N, which in the Lemurian language is the, which we describe and we give this numerical system, is in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. In the Lemurian language, it means 10. Literally, it means one for all and all for one, the law of the one. And we'll show you why in a second. But once that has happened, the 10th chakra has formed about a hand's length above the head, initially, and it'll grow bigger. The 11th chakra in the right shoulder blade and the 12th chakra in the left shoulder blade will open. When that happens, light will shoot out of the shoulder blades with angels. That's why we think they have wings, because they have all their chakras, and they also have a skirt of light towards the bottom, radiating out from the 8th and the 9th chakra. The 11th and the 12th radiates out the wings, and that's what gives angels the configuration of light that they have. Once you start to go into other levels of ascension, because there are three phases of ascension, which we clearly map out in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, as well as into Journey to the Heart of God, these three phases, in as you go into higher phases, the Lahun chakra becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. When you are at the apex of human development, which is your third and final phase of ascended mastery, that chakra encloses all other chakras. One has become all, and all has become one. And that is in preparation for going across that chasm that divides kingdoms and actually evolving into the God kingdom. So that's how the cold fire fits.
Wow. Thank you, Almin.
You're welcome.
Does this cold fire that you've been describing, it sounds to me like it's different than sexual energy. So if it is, do you mind describing the difference and then how possibly sexual energy could be used? Or,
yes.
Or are they the same thing?
Well, the one produces the other.
Oh, I see.
See, the vitally, vitally important secrets is that we cannot graduate from the human kingdom into the God kingdom without strong and potent pulsing of emotion. But that is required at a time when we are, in fact, the least inclined to feel emotional because we are vastly expanded. And when you're that vastly expanded, the emotions go away. Like when you first enter God consciousness, which is sort of the second big stage of humanity before the third stage, which is ascended mastery. And again, this is carefully mapped out in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. When you first go there, I mean, your emotions are such that you can't even interpret them. You've become everything. So it feels as though you are vastly expanded without a single solitary emotion. I used to say when I was in that stage, if I could feel, I think I might be in depression because I was just this empty place, but I couldn't even feel emotion. You know, and having used emotion as my guide up until that stage to determine for me what is life-enhancing and what is not, it was very odd to make decisions. So there are times when you must somehow know how to muster emotions. These very expanded times, like the very apex of human development, is also a time when there's hardly any sexual drive, because you don't desire anything. It's important then to know how to utilize a vibrant sexual relationship with life to produce the emotions that you need, because it is at that very moment that strength of emotions and rising kundalini will be that which takes you across the chasm into your godhood. So sexuality, whether it is with a partner or whether it is a vibrant sexual relationship with life, is so important. And, you know, we've got the 96 sexual expressions, and they are so exquisitely beautiful. They are not yet in any of our books because Mother has just produced them the last half of 2007. The book they will be in is called Windows into Eternity. And, you know, that will be produced roughly towards the end of summer of 2008. But the book Windows into Eternity will have the 96 sexual expressions. They are exquisite. You can have that sexual, sensual relationship with the food that you eat, with the water that you bathe in, with the air that's on your face, with the feel of your clothes all warm around your skin. It's that full awareness to the interaction that you're having with your environment at any given moment. It creates potency to your life. And so that brings the kundalini up, vitally important. Up until August of 2005, only 9 of our ascended masters, and there are thousands, had made it across into the God Kingdom. Those that made it across had to have known about the importance of sexual or kundalini energy. So, Paul, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
Brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From his background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in
myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Al Amin, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our third segment of the show. My name is Al Amin, and Paul St. John is with us again today. Paul, where would you like to go from here?
Well, Al Amin, just before the break, you mentioned states of expanded awareness, sometimes there can be a sense of emptiness there. And I was wondering if you thought that this might be the dark night of the soul that St. John of the Cross referred to, or that other people have referred to in most spiritual seekers' lives at some point. Are you familiar with that phrase?
Yes, I am, and that is not even remotely the same.
I don't think so.
No, the dark night of the soul. See, in order for these blocks of debris in the chakra systems to open, which is really the main goal of the first big stage of man. We've discussed the second stage as being God consciousness, the third stage as being ascended mastery. The first phase, or stage I guess we would call it, because each of these three big stages have three phases in them. But the first stage is identity consciousness, in which we identify with the mind and with the body and the emotions that we feel as being who we are. So in that first stage, the primary goal is to get us to go across that small little wall, which is not that small if you're on this side of it, but into God consciousness, where you have total silence of the mind, is in fact the opening of the chakras. It's the primary transfiguration that has to take place. In the second stage of God consciousness, the mental bodies transfigure. In the third stage of man, which is ascended mastery, during those three little phases in there, the emotional bodies transfigure. So the chakra transfiguration, remember there are 12 chakras as we've just explained, actually take 12 very distinct experiences that you can call them initiations. And the one of those initiations is the dark night of the soul, in which the recognition that you cannot look to others for your well-being takes place. It's the place of transformation in which the old dies away. And every stage of transformation basically has that death of the old quality to it. This is one of the major transfigurative stages that you go through as part of the initiations to clear these blockages within the chakra system, so you can get to the point of mastery within identity consciousness, which is where most teachers out there are, you know, so that you can actually go beyond that.
Thank you, Amin. That helps clarify that.
Yeah.
Another commonly used spiritual phrase is it's the use of the term internal war. And I was just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit and maybe help our listeners understand what it is that often when spiritual traditions are referring to a spiritual war being an internal war.
Well, there are several levels at which that answer can come. depending on the level at which that statement is given. But let us take a look at the different levels. Firstly, at the highest level, in the past, until August of 2006, when all true illusion in the cosmos was actually solved, up until that stage, there is the situation in which all knowledge that was sought was knowledge about beingness. Because what illusion was, is that there were portions of beingness that Mother, the infinite being, did not know whether that was her or not. She created the Father to mirror certain things to her, but he also had freedom of choice. So which was his freedom of choice and which is what she really was? There were reasons that go beyond the scope of this answer why she couldn't see that properly. But the point of the matter is, finally in August, she knew what she was and what she wasn't. So until that time, all knowledge sought was knowledge of self. It still is. But now it is to explore the diversity of our being. Then it was to understand simply what we were and what we are not. So all knowledge sought is knowledge of self. Therefore, that which keeps knowledge from us, which in the past was illusion, and now might be our level or capacity to understand, is within. So yes, the war, if the war was for knowledge, is always within. Now, let's take it down then to the next level. We have been picking up, again, that only applies until last year, but we have been picking up debris left from past lifetimes. So we had contracted with the infinite to solve a certain portion of existence. And that was our destiny. Things are different now. What would we like to do? How would we like to live? That's more the question now. But until that time, things were set as a destiny. Sometimes our destiny took us into hardship because we were the perception getters and we were pulled into contact with perception givers, those that represented the illusion. It's when we fought against our destiny, even if our destiny led us to that which was helpful, if it was painful, we wanted to pull the other way. So our destiny at that time was painful at times, because up until August of 2006, growth came through opposition. Now growth comes through support. So when we fought against our destiny, when those things were carefully designed by our higher self before we come in to provide us with the next step on our fulfilling our destiny to gain certain insights, but then we fight against it, that was called by the Toltecs the madness within the dream, but called by many seers of various walks of life the war within, fighting against our destiny. That would be the medium range answer, depending on what the person meant by that. Then there's a third answer, which is the lowest answer. And the war within for people, mostly, is fought in the internal dialogue. That's their weapon. And the war within is to suppress that which is unpleasant, painful, which gives us a poor self-image about ourselves, which brings shame and guilt, all those negative things, or blame. So we suppress it and keep smiling. And how do we do that? By containing inner dialogue. That's called dysfunction. But to keep our dysfunction alive, the weapon at our disposal is the arsenal of our internal dialogue, the thoughts that keep running through our heads, keeping us from being in silence. Because when we are in silence, All of these things arise unbidden, and we have to look at them. The war within is against learning and gaining the insights from our past experiences, and it is waged on in the battle of the silence of the mind. Did I say the third one in an understandable way?
Yes, actually, that was very helpful for me.
Because that's the sole purpose. It's resistance to feeling unpleasant things. Whereas if we took the time to feel them and simply gain their insights, you know, bit by bit by bit, that dialogue becomes less. And so we gain the silence of the mind, which means we regain our innocence. Because innocence is only present in the silence of the mind. And if our innocence is not there, it could lead to creating perpetrators that plunder the innocence of others. For having it not ourselves, we want to grasp it from others. And it also takes us out of our place of power, because that internal dialogue is either immediately in the next moment or in the past, but never in that place of power, which is the now. Silence of the mind puts us in the now. Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Al Mean experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness. The state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almi's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is. It is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almi's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back into Windows into Eternity. We are delighted to have you as our listening audience. We have about 5 minutes of show left, so thank you to Paul St. John, who is a wonderful master in his own right. And Paul, what would be the next question?
Well, I was wondering if you could summarize for us the difference between in past shows we've talked a lot about the Toltec path, as it's the spiritual path that you began your journey with. Could you talk about the difference between the old warrior's code, the Toltec warrior's code, and the new warrior's code, taking into consideration the change in basically the meaning of existence?
Yes, I'll be happy to. And first of all, we should define what a warrior is, because previously the purpose of life was to change the unknown into the known through experience. And we did that by finding the lessons that and the insights that lay hidden in the challenges of our life. So the warrior was a warrior against illusion. And so previously, the warriors lived sparingly, conserving energy, acting and engaging in battle only when absolutely necessary. They were always prepared to make their last stand at any given moment and place. In addition, warriors lived in an expanded state that slowed down time. This was called compressing time. Time is obsolete now, as we started out saying at the very beginning of our show, and now that time is obsolete, the new guideline tells us that because there's only this moment, all other moments are contained within it. We change ourselves in the present moment. The warrior now accesses energy through the ascension attitudes, bringing love, praise, and gratitude to every moment, so he can draw on the endless supply of awareness and energy that is available to each being at this time. In lavish expressions of the new emotions, he surrounds himself with that which promotes love and praise and gratitude and repels that which does not. Those who have earned the right to participate in this creation have already successfully made their last stand. Interacting sparingly or not at all with those of opposite energy, we are prepared every moment to find that which delights us. We no longer need to prepare for the worst to earn the luxury to expect the best. That which will delight us is in front of us at all times. This creation is designed for creativity and fun as we explore our being and what brings us joy. So, you see, the more joy we have, the more we grow. We are therefore constantly changing. Getting to know ourselves is a never-ending process. It's done moment by moment. The crucial part is to never get stuck in a rut. This will slow growth almost to a standstill. Embracing the new will help expand us and promote growth. The goal, therefore, is to embrace the newness of ourselves in every moment and to welcome new experiences that expand our joy. We are guided by our instinct at all times, as well as our body truth. There is no more urgency to become, just the joy of being. Paul, thank you for having joined us on today's show, and thank you too to our listeners. It is a delight to share this hour with you, and we hope you will continue to join us for Windows into Eternity. Goodbye now.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week. Thank you.